This call is being recorded.
Hi, everyone. This is Renee Rentmeester. I'm the creator and executive producer of the Cooking Without Looking TV show. And we're very excited today to have Rebecca Bridges. Rebecca, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
Oh, I'm great. I'm doing wonderful, too. Rebecca, you're married to Eric Bridges, who is the executive director of the ACB. Tell us a little bit about what you do.
My goodness, what do I do? Well,
or do we have enough time today?
I wear many hats. I am a mom of two boys, Tyler, who is 7, and Noah, who is 2. I work full-time in the accessibility field. I am a manager I'm a member of the leadership team at TPG Interactive, which is an organization that focuses on accessibility of digital properties. So mobile apps and websites and kiosks and things, making those more accessible. So, we homeschool our 7-year-old. So I am a homeschooler, I guess you'd say, or a home educator.
Oh my. A lot of people learned about that during this pandemic.
Yes. Yes. And myself included. Our family, it was Tyler, who is our 7-year-old, he went to kindergarten for 3 quarters, and then the world ended. No, just kidding. But it felt like it for a while, and things shut down, and we had some challenges with our school district in terms of accessibility of some of the apps and things they were using. And so we decided to homeschool, to give it a whirl for the 2020 school year. And it went so well that we're doing it again, and we're planning to do it next year for 3rd grade. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, that's great. That's really wonderful. Well, tell us a little bit about your life, before this point. Were you born blind, Rebecca?
Yeah, so I was born, I'm from Indiana originally, and I was born in Valparaiso, which is near Chicago. And I was 2.5 months early, so I was a preemie, and I was 2 pounds and 3 ounces when I was born. And
wow.
I was in an incubator for 24 hours only, and after that, I was doing fine, I guess. And they discovered, I think in about 2 months, that I wasn't able to see. And so like many, like a number of blind people in that time, when you're born prematurely like that, your retinas aren't fully developed and they detach. And they can detach at any point. Sometimes it happens later in life, but for me, it happened pretty quickly. Sometime after I was born, between then and 2 months. So yeah, I've been blind since birth for all intents and purposes. My education journey, I started out, at a school for the blind, the Indiana School for the Blind. My parents talked to a lot of preschools and, about our situation, and they were concerned about, me not getting the skills and tools that I needed to be successful. So they moved from northern Indiana to the middle part of the state to be closer to the School for the Blind. So I went there from preschool until 5th grade, and then I transferred to my local public school for middle school. And, I don't know about the rest of you, but middle school is challenging, and then you add blindness on top of that. And it was challenging. Yeah, my district wasn't overly prepared for me, and there were lots of, you know, bumps in the road. And ultimately, I decided that I would have a little bit more flexibility if I returned to the School for the Blind. I chose to go back because I was starting to really get into music and things like that. So I went back and ended up finishing my high school there. I went like part day to the School for the Blind and then the other half of the day to a local public school nearby. And so
now, which did I you like better?
Each of them for different reasons. I found that because the School for the Blind was a residential campus, you know, there are things that I got to do that a lot of kids, or that I had to learn to do, that a lot of kids my age, you know, sighted people, my peers didn't really do. Like, I did my own laundry at a young age. I learned how to, how to prepare grocery lists and go shopping. You know, my senior year, we lived in a house. There were four girls. We had to plan our own meals. And yeah, I know. Look out, right?
We had
rules. But yes, four girls in a house all
rules
together.
Bend.
And yes, rules bend. For the most part, I was a pretty good kid. I was an honor roll student, and I did what I needed to do. But yeah, we had to pretty much take care of ourselves. So I found that I was very well positioned when I graduated to, you know, go into the real world, because I had had all those experiences and I got to participate in, you know, adaptive sports. I was a runner. I did track.
How did you do that? How do they set it?
There are two tracks. So they have a long straight track and they have like wire, kind of like swim lanes in a swimming pool, mm-hmm. kind of where you have the lane markers. They have like a wire that runs down along the track, and there are tape, like little rolled up rolls of tape marking the starting line, the 60 meter or the 100 meter, and then when you hit that, you would turn. And so, like, I would, the 60 meter sprint, you would just run until you hit, your hand hit the tape, and then you were done. The 600 meter, which was my other race, I would, you know, do a number of laps, 60, 60, 60, you know, back and forth or whatever. So that's kind of how that worked. And so if you were totally blind or you had very low vision, you ran some races on your own on the track like that. Or you would do, there was the standard, 400 meter track, the round, you know, the typical oval track or whatever. And I also did a tandem race. So I would go sighted guide with someone who, you know, we were all kind of blind to some extent, but someone with better vision than I had. And we would run together.
Oh, that's great. That's great. That just blows me away, because I like to run. And, you know, I imagine while you're talking, I imagine someone like you're holding on to someone. And I just remember of a race that I ran where at the end, I was like exhausted. And one of my friends just went up to me and she pulled me over the line.
I did that to one of my sighted runners once. We were running a race and she got tired and started to stop. And I just started like hollering at her and going, "No, you have to come." And I was like yanking her, and like, she's the one that can see.
that's what happened to me. It was really funny. My friend just ran up on me and she's like, she's pulling me in and she's like, you have to finish. I'm no, I don't want to finish, I'm tired. And she got me over the line.
There you go. But, there you go.
So tell us a little bit more about what it's like. You know, people always talk about how difficult it is to parent. And you and Eric must have some special tricks. You guys are both blind and your kids aren't. What are some of the things, like, for example, like, does Tyler, is he more compassionate? Is he, does that help with the compassion factor?
Well, you know, I think it really depends on the kid. I mean, for us, you know, we found, like anything else in life, you know, you need to have, you know, there are techniques that you can employ that make things easier as a blind person. I mean, whether you're talking about getting, you know, your own education or a job or, you know, going grocery mm-hmm. shopping or being a parent. I mean, there are just things that you do and things that you, you know, that make your life a little bit easier and more manageable. So, you know, for example, you know, when your kid is starting to walk, you know, if you're concerned about knowing where they are, you put bells on their shoes.
Oh! You know,
we started out with little, I bought those giant, it looks like a giant safety pin. They're like, but they call them diaper pins. So like for those who cloth diaper, I guess, which I don't do. I'm sorry, environment, but that's just too much for me. Sorry, Earth.
I hear you. I hear you.
But I bought a few of those, and then I got some bells, just little tiny bells from Michael's craft store. And I attached a couple to each diaper pin, and then I would fasten them to the lacings on my son's shoes. As they, for Noah, I actually found some bells that the kids can wear on their ankles. Like you just Velcro them. There's a strap. They're attached. They're adhered to a strap, and they're bigger bells. They sound more like jingle bells. And I'd, you know, put those on Noah from time to time to know where he is. So just as an example, those are some things that you do. And you have to think about things like, okay, how am I going to transport my kids, like car seats and, you know, juggling all the things, right? So I looked for what are the most lightweight seats I can buy that are, you know, still safe. And how do you have to learn to install them properly so that every time you get in a car, I mean, every car is different, right? So you have to learn, okay, well, I'm going to maybe skip the latch and use the seatbelt installation, because every car seat, you can either use the latch system or the seatbelt. So you figure that out. I think, you know, Tyler, to answer your question, we are lucky that, you know, Tyler he is such a kind-hearted little boy. He's very sweet. So he'll do things like, for example, I took him not too long ago to a day camp where he was going to go and play sports all day, and which he loves, by the way. So we and it's a place we'd never been before. And I take him in and I, you know, let them know he's there and that I'm dropping him off and then I'll be picking him up, because you have to do the whole check-in song and dance. And then
sure.
I'm turning to leave and he says, "Mom, I'll walk you to your Uber." And he takes me out.
Aww.
And walks me. And I think,
so
you know, I don't know if he did that because he felt like maybe I needed help, which, you know, I didn't. But if, you know, or if he just wanted to give me a hug because he likes to do that too. So, and didn't want to do it in front of all his buddies. I have no idea. But,
he's compassionate, like he understands, like he wanted the help, it sounds like.
Yeah, but you know, it's not their job. You know, we're not raising butlers. We're raising children.
Well, you know, I see that with my grandson. He'll do something or he'll bring food and he'll offer me some, and it's like, well, wow, that was extremely thoughtful of you. And he's like six. So yeah. I just think that sounded so thoughtful on Tyler's part. Raising a butler, I like that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, what? How did you when he got when I'm sorry when he got to be old enough? How did you explain? How did you guys explain blindness to him?
You know, well, it started by just saying, you know, mommy and daddy's eyes are broken. You know, they don't work, and we can't see. And you know, from an early age, you know, so when we had to explain it, that's how we explained it. You know, we've had other conversations since that time. So, you know, occasionally he'll say, you know, sometimes he'll say, man, I wish you could see. And, you know, we'll say, well, why is that? And then he'll, you know, there's one reason or another. I don't know what kind of feelings he has about it. I mean, we talk about it some, but he doesn't express a lot of, you know, discomfort with it. You know, there are some challenges that, you know, he starts as he's gotten older, he's seen some things. For example, when we're trying to get a ride and we are refused because of our dogs, he's seen that, and that's hard.
Isn't that illegal?
Well, yes, but I mean, well, illegal, yes, it is technically against the law, but you know, you could argue, you know, sometimes there are repercussions for it and many times there aren't probably. So, I mean, we can report it and we do that. But, you know, he's seen drivers argue with us about the dogs. He's seen us, you know, be refused. And so those are hard things. You know, anytime a child witnesses discrimination like that, you know, that's tough. And as a parent, you have to, you know, handle yourself appropriately in the situation to model, you know, the proper behavior for your children, but yet you have to be assertive, and then you have to kind of explain to your child what, you know, what just happened and why, and try to, you know, you don't want to form, you know, ideas in their own heads about, you know, about other people or biases. So, you know, it's tough, but, you know,
it's humbling
age,
too, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is humbling. And it's a challenge, but it's part of life. Like, we all have struggles in life and we all have situations. You know, some are easy to see, like blindness, and others are not. And so everybody's got their thing. And, you know, from an early age, though, Tyler in particular, I mean, Noah's still much younger and he's more of a work in progress. He's only two and we're still figuring him out. But, you know, from an early age, Tyler seemed to understand that we weren't able to see. I mean, he would put our hands on things when he wanted to show us things. Just from an early age, he's always been very perceptive about that.
Wow, that's so sweet. I can't wait to meet him
he's
video
fun.
On Zoom at any rate. Well, yeah. Tell us, you've got a special brownie recipe you want to share with us today?
I do. So we have the Bridges fudge brownies. And I don't know about you, but I'm a bit of a snob when it comes to food, and I can tell the difference between brownies in a box and brownies from scratch. And as a kid, I was blessed with a lot of family members, but my mother in particular, who is an excellent cook and baker. So my father always laughs and jokes that he says, Rebecca, I can't believe that you know how to cook and that you like doing it, because my mom was so good, and I never, you know, I somehow always found myself, you know, on the phone or doing something else at home when it was time to make dinner. I was conveniently unavailable. But, you know, once I got out on my own, you know, girls got to eat, and I couldn't afford to eat out every day. So had to learn to cook. But back to the brownies. So this is a modification of my mom's fudge brownies. that she made from scratch. So would you like me to share it with you then?
Well, I can't wait. That sounds great.
Okay, so it's 1/2 cup of butter or margarine, 1 cup of granulated sugar, 1 teaspoon vanilla, 2 eggs, 2 1-ounce squares of unsweetened chocolate, 3/4 cup flour, and I also add about 3/4 cup of chocolate chips. And so what you do, so you melt the butter and chocolate in a medium saucepan, and you remove that from the heat, and you stir in the sugar. And then I usually wait for that to cool just a little bit because I don't want to cook my eggs in the brownie batter.
It's nothing like scrambled eggs and brownies.
Yeah, I know. That would be weird. so then I blend in the eggs one at a time. I add the vanilla. I stir in the flour. And then I just fold in the chocolate chips. And then I spread it in a greased 8-inch pan, and I bake at 350 for about 30 minutes. I watch it pretty closely because you want to make sure you don't overbake.
Do you have any tricks to knowing when they're actually done?
Ah, yes. Well, the old toothpick trick is always good. You stick it right in the middle, and if it comes out gooey, then it's may not be done. The other thing sometimes I'll do is I'll kind of very slightly touch the edge of the pan with my finger to see, okay, how is it looking on the outside? Because that always cooks first. And then you kind of tap it right in the middle to see if it's done. The challenge with these brownies, though, is that they are pretty gooey from the chocolate chips. So the toothpick test isn't always the most reliable because you get gooey, you know, chocolate chips. But, you know, it's having a slightly underbaked brownie is probably better than an overbaked brownie. So if you know, err on the side of caution there.
I like the part about the extra chocolate chips in along with the chocolate squares. That's an amazing trick right there. That sounds like something very special.
Yeah, I like to, that's pretty much my go-to recipe when we're going to a cookout or, you know, for our, before COVID and everything, we had get-togethers fairly frequently with a small group from church. And so I often would have like potluck dinners a couple times a month where everybody would, there was like a theme, like Taco Tuesday or something like that, and everybody would take something. So I often take dessert because they're easy to it's easy to transport. You can make it ahead of time. So I didn't take my brownies all the time, but I definitely, it's my go-to for gatherings or, you know, to make a treat for other people or that kind of thing.
Oh, that sounds great. So Rebecca, I've really enjoyed our conversation today. Tell everyone how they can reach you.
How they can reach me?
If they want to, you know, talk to you about parenting, or is there like an email or a phone number or some way to reach out to you?
Well, sure. Well, I'm on Facebook. You can also send an email to bridgesrj, all one word, @gmail.com.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Rebecca. And we look forward to having you and Eric and Tyler and Noah on our show this Thursday. And, you know, as we like to say, thank you for helping us change the way we see blindness.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you very much. And if any of you want to reach out to us at Cooking Without Looking, you can go to our website at www.cookingwithoutlookingtv.wordpress.com. Have a wonderful day, Rebecca.
Thank you. Same to you.